This is Michael Troughton, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 517 of Gallifrey Public Radio. I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
And I'm Jay. This week, we're discussing the proverbial elephant in the room, the anachronistic jukebox that stands out so clearly in the 15th Doctor's TARDIS console room.
Joining us today in the conversation about a musical source is a musical source we happen to know, New York-based jazz pianist and composer Jess Jerkovic. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
We had some related conversations at some cons that we've shared space over the last calendar year or so. As Julie had mentioned before we started recording, it seemed only right that we get a chance to continue the conversation on our terms and record it for everyone else to listen to our theories. So where do we begin?
What's the high level, like, what does everybody think the reason behind this is? Like, is it just set decoration, or do we think there's more to it?
I would be shocked if there wasn't anything more to it, especially because we've already had some tastes of what could be in there with some of the clips we've heard in the trailers and so on. And the Christmas special is not quite fresh in my mind, but I think there must have been at least one in there. I forget. You can improve my memory. But it feels like that's going to be significant. I mean, we got a musical number in the Christmas special. Are we going to get more of that? Maybe we will. It looks like that's a direction that they're going. But what's nice about the idea of a TARDIS jukebox is that it could be really diverse, theoretically, in terms of the music that they source, not just, you know, the music that Russell Davis grew up with, but, you know, before and current and everything. It could be very exciting and stimulating. I hope they go for a wide breadth of styles of music.
I'm wondering, too, about a potential connection to, I think it was during the 23 specials, specifically during the 14 and Donna little triad that we had. And there was the fact that the setup for Wild Blue Yonder was the TARDIS belting out this war rallying tune, you know, which was unusual. I don't really recall any time where the TARDIS sort of took upon itself to provide anything other than a subtle ambient pad of noise under the rest of the or cloister bells. You know, if you heard those, things were going horribly wrong. But it felt like it was some way kind of a tee up to where things were headed in this accompaniment vein.
So kind of jumping off what you're saying specifically, Kier, I think that for me, the jukebox might represent the TARDIS's voice. And what we've heard before from the TARDIS is the cloister bells as a warning chime. And so I'm hoping that by adding something that becomes not just like an overall sound coming from the TARDIS, but something to, if it is allowed, for it to play music that is related to what either the TARDIS is feeling, where they're going. And so it's the TARDIS sort of giving them entrance, as we know that they're going to be changing outfits and dress settings and stuff like that too. So if the TARDIS is allowed to be part of that, and this is the physical manifestation of that, so that they can interact with it, that would, for me, would be really fun. And what I'm hoping for, and I cross my fingers, because if it's not that, then I'll just be like, oh, okay, cool, it was music, but also, like, that'd be fun.
I can't see it being just set dressing, because you have this vast space that's just very blank. It is a blank canvas for any number of lights and stuff like that, but there's very little in the way of decoration. So for them to throw this one thing in there that stands out like a sore thumb, I mean, this isn't Eccleston or Tennant's, grunge phase TARDIS where there's stuff all over the place. It's not a Studio Ghibli background. This is something that it doesn't matter what angle you're looking from, you're going to see that and it's going to stand out. So there's no way it's just like, we need something in here. What are we going to throw? It's got to have some meaning behind it. What that is, I don't know. I'm excited to find out, but I know there's got to be something to it.
I wonder, and Jess, maybe you might be able to speak to this. What would the acoustics of a completely spherical space be? That's got to be like the Oval Office gone horribly awry.
Boy, I don't know if I can speak authoritatively on acoustics, but it depends on where the jukebox's speakers are. And I'm assuming there'd be, more than one.
The Bluetooth has got to be really strong.
Got to be great. At the very least, duodecaphonic sound. I was just watching The Sun Makers, and so that line is fresh in my mind. Surely something like that. But it's sort of round and curved, right? So that would probably help. There's a corridor in Grand Central Terminal where if you stand at one corner and speak just at a very normal tone of voice, the person at the other corner can hear you clear as day, even though they are about 30 feet away from you. Mm-hmm. So it could be that such a shape is very conducive to music, and maybe hopefully, I'm assuming that the TARDIS would not have any dead spots. I think the TARDIS is pretty sophisticated acoustically, so right. I think that's a perhaps maybe they even considered that they wanted a shape to take advantage of or at least a sense of acoustics,
right?
In the
amphitheater shell.
Uh huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like even if something's slightly off, the little round things would just like slightly shift and automatically adjust to keep the sound just going and going with the acoustics of it. Just like
long tail forever. Decay. Yeah.
Yeah. We never let off the pedal of the piano. We just hold it and hold forever.
That's true. When it first showed up, I think we were all theorizing that it was going to be, maybe this is just the beginning and it's going to start picking up other elements, right? There's going to be the jukebox one week and then it was going to be another thing in another episode and so on. I'm not really sure if that's going to play out because there's something endearing about this one odd, brilliantly colored and dynamic because it's an old Wurlitzer. So it's the one that has like from the late 50s where it has the bubbles that run up the glass tubes up the side. So it has, it's a dynamic piece in many regards. You get to see the armature inside when records are flipping and so on. So it's this lovely piece of business in the middle of an Apple store, as some of our friends have coined the new TARDIS interior. Yeah. So
I had not heard that.
Yeah.
That is now, I can't unhear that.
Credit to Will.
That's all you're going to see.
Yeah.
True. It could be the new series version of a hat stand, which was a perennial background object in the old series TARDIS. Could be going for that. But as we were saying, I don't think it's going to be just something quaint in the background. It would.
Well, I mean, if you're thinking like lore-wise, it's that the TARDIS has created this interior and included the jukebox. So maybe it is exactly like Julie was saying. It's like the TARDIS wants to be able to weigh in on things. It's like, hey, I played the Wild Blue Yonder and that got your attention. Maybe I can say other things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As you were saying that, Jay, I was sort of thinking about what you were saying, Julie, is that it could be like almost setting the stage for the characters as to where they're going to go. It's going to, prepare them in a way by giving them the right piece of music for what they are, where they are about to go, and perhaps what adventure they're going to go. Just another feature of the TARDIS's telepathic circuits.
That's true.
Yeah. It's always had a sense of where the Doctor needs to be. Mm-hmm. And so this is just the way of placing that and giving them an entrance, I guess, for lack of kind of a better way.
Literally
setting the tone. Yeah. I like it. So with that, what would we... I know we have... And I haven't looked because... Okay. Spoilers. I know we have titles. And I know we have some sense of some outfits and costumes. But either because of that or outside of that, what would we hope or wish to hear in relation to the season coming up?
My wish was met with the trailer that we just received because we've got Bowie. That was a miss during the classic era that I think that many producers were probably kicking themselves for in the decades to follow. I can't think of anything that would speak more to that combination of whimsy and quirkiness and a winning smile with this strange element of darkness just under the surface that you're not sure if you want to inquire about. Just all of those things that come into the Doctor and friends having adventures, but occasionally in distress. And Bowie's career, as far as the tonality of a lot of the more epic releases and thematic material, I think combines with that so well, along with some of the disjointed nature of a lot of his lyrical composition, which sort of goes along with the idea of being scattered across time. So that seemed like the natural pairing for me. So when the trailer dropped and we were able to get changes in there, I was set. You know, I'd love to hear more, but that alone, that ticking that box satisfied me.
So you're good. You don't need to watch what's coming up. You're just like, that is good. Just one trailer. Okay.
I'll just go listen to Ziggy Stardust and I'm done.
I love the emotion and excitement that Murray Gold is able to put into his scores. So I don't think that we need anything like foreboding or, you know, like super heartfelt or anything like that. Like, I think that Gold can cover those bases pretty well. The thing that I'm hoping for is like there's a sense of fun when you throw in the upbeat pop music that I don't think that you're going to get from the standard composing that you typically have in the show. So like, you know, things like, I mean, the Spice Girls was just, you're not going to get that from Murray Gold, but it added so much to the story. So I don't have anything specific that I'm hoping to hear necessarily. I hope they go with more like pop music just to lighten the mood sometimes, because you need it.
I think you're right about Murray Gold's bona fides, Jay, is that he's certainly keyed into a pop sense as well as, you know, the ability to write for orchestra and make those emotional cues for us that we all remember. I was brought into mind the series Sex Education, which Shruti Gatwa was obviously a star of, just finished very recently, at least on our screens. And I started to think about the possibility of Doctor Who as having a regular, for lack of a better term, pop music soundtrack, as Sex Education did. There were specially made cues, but a lot of it was the mood was fulfilled by just the right song from, you know, this artist or that artist. And we, you know, when you recognize it, you're taken back to a time and place. I wonder if they'll actually go in that direction. Like some of the score, quote score, the soundtrack is a better word. Some of the soundtrack might be more of that and maybe even a little less of Murray Gold. But Murray Gold certainly is capable of writing his own pop songs, as we've seen, or songs in general. Goblin song, anyone? So it could certainly go in that direction. Like I say, I guess I have kind of old school tastes anyway. So Bowie's great for me, but I grew up kind of on the three S's: Sting, Steely Dan, and Stevie Wonder. That would thrill me if any of those found their way there. But at the same time, we're now dealing with a, just to be practical about it, we are dealing with a Disney company. We're very likely, if we're going to get anything to perhaps deal with a little bit more Disney properties or Disney connections with the music. I'm not saying that we're going to suddenly hear Someday My Prince Will Come from Snow White, but we are more likely. That might narrow down the field of what we might hear. And actually, Kira, I kind of wanted to mention something that you had brought up. I think the old, the classic series would love to have done something like that, but you'll notice there's almost a complete absence of any music of those styles, those currencies in right. classic Doctor Who. And I think that might have been a money thing. You know, right,
I was thinking
from
the same.
Right from the beginning, we don't get the Beatles, we get John Smith and the Common Men, which is a library track, you know. So so I feel like that was a lot to ask. I mean, it was a big deal for me when Courtney Pine appeared playing sax on Silver Nemesis, playing his jazz quartet. So it was, it didn't seem as feasible, and I wonder how much of it was a money thing. And then, you know, two episodes into the new series, we get Toxic. So different time, different resources.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now, as you say, with Disney there as a lever to push a lot of those rights and holdings for the material, it opens up a massive library, both of their own properties and just their ability to be able to kind of pull sway on other pop material that they like to make use of. And I think finding that sort of dovetail or the balance between what we have come to expect from gold as far as driving the emotional core of scenes or the frenetic nature of chase sequences or things of that nature, or slamming us in the heartstrings with the long songs and those sorts of compositions. I don't think those have to necessarily step back to make room for a more conventional or popular soundtrack. If it strikes that, I guess this is more of an American practice of using the pop material as your transition pieces, and then you'd have your scores within scenes. But when you're doing all of your, when you're montaging to the next thing, or you're getting your hard wipe to the next sequence, that's your opportunity to get 15 seconds of quick material from something to say, hey, kids, we're moving on to another location now. Here's that tune you just had on the radio last week, and bip, 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 bip. So,
I mean, I hope it's not ad filled.
Well, no, I'm paid for the premium Spotify at least. I mean, at least.
Well, and I think part of that is, like you're saying, the Disney money. I think that does open some doors that potentially either they would have said, oh, pie in the sky, we're not really going to get that. But now we do have the opportunity for that. So hopefully that's where some of this backing and support puts us, whether or not we ever learn if that's where that's coming from or where that's going. I don't know if that even really matters, except to say, hopefully it does fit into the stories if that's how it's going to go. If we're going to get a lot of music per episode or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like thrown into it because this is a set piece that we want to use and make use of, and that it's not overused and, oh, there goes that thing again, or kind of like knocking into it and all of a sudden it's playing or having to cut scenes to stop it. I don't know. But one thing that I am hoping to see is sort of a dance tune. But because I know that they have some really cool classical outfits, I want to see them do like a standard and it have the music come from the TARDIS. So like, and view listeners, I have my hands up and I'm doing like the hands movie walkie kind of I don't know what that dance is called.
She's gesturing what would be some sort of a so picture. Julie, let me see if I'm walking correctly with you here. You're seeing a sort of a timey-wimey interpretation of a current pop tune a la Knight's Tale and Golden Years.
Sure. Yeah, something like that, where we get like a square dance sort of line. It doesn't necessarily have to be current. It could be fitted of the time, but right. I just think that would be so fun. And with the outfits that we've seen pictures of, like that's yeah, the first thing outfits, I was like, I want that because that's so formal and I want to see them have fun with it. And I want the TARDIS to get to play in that space too.
And that's another thing that I'm thinking will be a big benefit from all of this is like, they made the point in the 60th specials to point out like, you know, the doctor has been running the whole time. And so there's always been that kind of intensity and things like that. Having this jukebox in the TARDIS gives the chance to show a bit of downtime, show that it's not one adventure leading straight into the next or into the next. And, you know, have a moment where the doctor and the companion can just relax and enjoy each other's company. And that makes the emotional hits of the intensity that much more. Mm-hmm. So I hope we do see a couple instances of them just relaxing and enjoying the music.
Mm. I love that idea, Jay, actually, because being the old school fan that I am, or maybe, you know, old man yelling at a cloud sort of fan. one thing I miss in the new series is more moments of character and more moments of a little bit of repose building up to that. Of course, we get that. I'm not saying we never get that. But when an episode is 45 minutes long, you don't always have time for that. And so everything right. goes at such a pace that those moments when you get them really are refreshing. So I agree. I hope that's exactly what they do.
Yeah, those are the ones that stand out. When things are coming at you, it's the ringing in your ears after a loud sequence ends, and you're left to notice just how quiet the silence is. That mm. has a tremendous impact. So hopefully, I don't know if they've discussed what the average runtime for the episodes to come are going to be. If they're going to be continuing to try to push towards the hour mark as they had with the specials. Be great if they did. I mean, I would kind of expect so if based on their distribution mechanisms at this point. But I know at least at present, they're still sort of minding for BBC and iPlayer release. So I don't really know where that's going to fall. As far as, you know, giving them just those couple of extra minutes here and there to just look at one another and sort of reflect on whatever traumatic thing they've just been through. I'm still, just my head was still tumbling through what you had said about not recalling enough about the Christmas special to know whether or not there was a pop piece in there. I don't know the tune, but I know that when we first see the doctor, it's in the nightclub.
Of course. That's right.
So, yeah. And that apparently was known material as well. It wasn't just something where they grabbed, some sort of Creative Commons dance electronica track. It's a well-known piece. So yes. That at least you talk about enjoying it for the moment, because yes, I think the doctor was there on an agenda because they're sort of keeping tabs on Ruby and her bad luck or her, you know, her coincidental nature and such. But while you're there, screw it. You know, Doc Martens and a kilt and a, you know, let's go. So I think
and that, then what was Ruby's band playing?
That was the other thing. I'm wondering, I don't recall the tune. I want to say it was a standard. It was sort of a kind of their take on an old crooner's standard, possibly holiday related. I don't really recall. I have to go back and listen to it again. But yeah, that makes me wonder. So try to put this together. We've got Ruby's band. We've got the Goblin song. We know we've got Jinx Monsoon coming in for this, playing a character that is apparently bedecked in measures and staffs and such. We've got the all but known that we're going to have crossing paths with the Beatles at some point, to what end, I'm not sure. And what looks like a big ensemble dance number coming in at one point, whether that is part of maybe they were filming something and we're seeing the play within the play, or maybe they actually, something is happening that's causing the public to suddenly break into song a la classic musical. I don't know about that. But what is the connection between this and the jukebox and these elements of music that are starting to become more and more prominent just in increasing frequency and fashion? What's the theme? What are they trying to, what is Russell doing? What is he doing?
creating joy.
That's not it. He's a craftsman. He's got an angle. He lives and dies by angles.
I can't help but think, just given the way that the trailer frames things, that there is going to be a, not necessarily a tragedy, but some big emotional hit after the interaction with the Beatles and stuff like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they don't start sprinkling in music through the first ones. And then, like, as you lead into some of the later episodes, you realize that it has much more of a presence, that there is something nefarious going on and it centers around music, or it uses music to some end, and it becomes much more of a plot point instead of just setting the scene. And then it could lead all the way up to, some of the scenes we've seen in the trailer of Ruby with the music and stuff. It's like, I think it's going to play a much bigger part than we are meant to understand at the beginning.
Nothing he does, nothing he puts in there is simply just set dressing. Nothing is incidental. It all seems to have significance. He works on too many concurrent levels to put things in just for the sake of filling space.
That's a really tough question for me to answer. All I would say is, the first thing that came to mind when you reminded me of the club scene is that maybe we're going to have a TARDIS as a club. Maybe there's going to be moments where they're just dancing for a bit. I don't know. But if the first view we see of the 15th Doctor is at the club, I don't know, maybe that's going to be part of his home in the TARDIS too. Otherwise, all I could guess at is, well, music is a universal language. Maybe we'll see it in some way, establishing a bond between alien peoples that he comes across, or something like that. That was out of left field. I don't know if I can go any further than that, but lots of different places one could go, especially when you're as creative as Russell T. Davis is. And he's great at taking the idea and running with it, and running a long way, starting from what would seem like a very, reductive is the wrong word, but something very digestible and understandable that you could explain in two or three words. Sometimes it becomes the title. And then running with it, and then making, an hour of drama out of it. I don't know. Well, I'll be excited to see for sure.
Yeah, I like that idea that it's going to be a language or something that can almost like a replacement for math, which we always think of as the universal language, like shapes, math, numbers, it flows. But what if it is music, and there's the way that the TARDIS can then interpret, almost like a translator, that we've seen a lot of different methods used in other sci-fi series. And now we're going to see it do something like that, where music gets translated back and forth, but not like Bumblebee the car starts playing random snippets and like calls things out, right? But like actual emotional beats or things like that. That would be really neat. But yeah, I do think also similar to what you're saying, Jay, where I'm hoping that some of the little tidbits we've gotten so far open up a little bit more, and then it starts to become more involved, and it's not just hit you in the face with it right at the beginning and say, like, the Doctor realizes, oh, TARDIS, it's nice to hear you, or something like that, if that is what it is too, and letting it kind of be more natural and, play with it as it goes along.
I'm thinking, like, there's two main outcomes that I want the music being such a big part of it to come from. And, like, one is I want songs to become so inextricably linked with what you see. I mean, you think of some songs that have been, like, you can't hear Holding Out for a Hero now without most people thinking of Shrek. There are certain songs that are just so ingrained in the media that you hear them from. Like, I want something like that. I want something that's going to be so tied to Doctor Who that it gets related. And the other thing is just, I want the emotional punch to be heightened that much more. Like I recently just rewatched The Good Place for, I don't know, the fourth or fifth time at this point. And like in the finale, there's a song that they play that just the first note of the piano broke me because I knew what was coming. And it was literally just the one. And that's the kind of thing I'm hoping that they're trying to put behind this.
Which I think we've seen from Murray before. And I think I always think of Vincent and the Doctor. I always think of I Am the Doctor. I think that's the one of the – those two are kind of the most iconic for me from his run. There are others, of course. But in my mind, if I hear those, I'm like, oh, I stop everything I'm doing. And I can't play it while I'm working. Like I have to have music on. But I can't play those because I will just not work. And I will sometimes just sit in that moment and get a little, it gets dusty. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I gotta work again. It's fine. And I don't want that every single moment. But I do think that that is one thing that, because Murray Gold is so good at that and finding those places, I want the jukebox to allow some of that to come into it and not just overtake his music either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll find a way to coordinate it. I mean, it's he'll be, you know, he'll be part of that decision making for sure as to what music will be his and what music will be brought to the production. You know,
I'm also wondering about the fact that of late we've had a lot of recognizable composers and particularly film and television scoring composers who have found either a niche or an occasional little exercise in interpreting pop material. Ramin Djawadi and everything that he did for Westworld is what stands out in my mind, because I go back and listen to those pieces all the time. And not just because of, you know, his particular take on stripping down a lot of recognizable material, but then also just the fact that the core material that he was using is my generation's stuff. I mean, we're listening to Nirvana and Radiohead and these things all being done in this very dark, sinister, minimal, you know, cello and piano, just it eerie as hell. And it has a great impact for the tonality of what that show was trying to bring forward. And I wonder, or Bear McCreary taking Watchtower and songs like that, you know, there's just that opportunity to be able to not only use the recognizable pop material, but also be able to put some kind of a spin on it that ties it to the property that it's being used for in terms of the nature of its particular spin, and also just creating something wholly new out of that take. I don't know if Murray's done that before. I don't remember ever hearing him like riff on other property in his compositions.
Not really. I was thinking about that too recently because I had occasion to rewatch Daleks in Manhattan and Evolution of the Daleks. And what I actually found remarkable that I didn't remember is that right at the beginning, you get Rhapsody in Blue. But you don't get Murray's take on Rhapsody in Blue. You get a literal recording of Rhapsody in Blue. I actually found that kind of surprising because Murray's more than capable of doing his own version of that. And so it's interesting, again, that decision, when do you go with the original material and when do you, you know, homage the material? Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure he can, but I also wonder, he's much more likely, you know, I haven't done very much composing that people know about, but I know enough about composers to think that he'd much rather do something of his own rather than necessarily be sort of riffing on someone else's work. I that's just a sense. I have no real proof of that, but just in listening to what he does, he's written his own songs. You know, he's obviously the memorable themes that Julie mentioned. I think that's much more likely to happen where he is concerned. But hey, I don't know. A good composer, especially when they're working in media, is flexible. And so I would think there's some room for that to happen.
It's true.
I wonder if we'll get hints to that before he does any sort of like major interview to tell, you know, spill the tea or whatever you want to say. So along those lines of knowing, like, if we hear his compositions and then we hear just whole cloth, like we paid for the rights, this is that song, and you just get to hear that from the jukebox, or if we'll get different clues to that where we're getting
he pulls the baseline from something, yeah, or takes the chord progression from it and uses that as the theme. Oh, mm-hmm. That'd be cool.
Something like that would be really fun to see, and to see if he, I mean, it would definitely be telling as to whether he's involved in the conversation. I think he is. Like, his music, this is the thing that they do. But I wonder how that will play back and forth with, like, I think you started off with this, Kier, with, like, how the TARDIS's jukebox is part of the conversation, or is it just kind of brought in to play a little song every once in a while? But if he writes for it, does that mean that it is more of something earlier on in whatever we get for those episodes? Mm-hmm. I think that'll be, I mean, I always say this, but like, I can't wait to find out and see what that's going to look like. Right. What it will sound like.
Right. I mean, it's at least as regards the Beatles episodes, maybe it was the music that inspired the story that he ended up writing. And it could be that is the foundation of the whole thing, is a core song. Who knows?
I'm just hoping for opportunities where there are all of these what sound like horrible puns in the dialogue, but the Doctor's actually just planting seeds for lyric ideas into John and Paul's heads.
Oh, no.
And he's just taking the opportunity to kind of... Yeah, oh, look at this.
Similar to kind of nudging in the direction of writing Frankenstein and from Via Diladani. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, or I don't know what the name of Mavity is, because that's not where that came from. Like, it would be fun, but also, like, are you, so legit question, are you as a fan of the Beatles from the time, are you okay with that? If the Doctor is really the one who gave them all of their stuff?
110%. Okay. Are you kidding?
I'm just making sure.
Are you joking?
Have you met Kier?
I don't. The two things you love the most in the world are one, and you didn't even realize until this year.
End all be all. Come on. It's like Ouroboros just coming around. It's fine.
Okay. Just making sure. I didn't know if that would be something where it's like, no, I need my my thing separate, my history and my future.
I don't want peanut butter in my chocolate, darn it.
Yeah.
I don't want my peanut butter and my chocolate to come in two separate containers. I'd be much happier if they were just in one. Just put them in the jar at once. That's
I feel like they make that and it did not hold up to that idea, though.
Don't look in the closet. There's like four cases of that stuff in there. I don't think we've been able to draw any sort of definitive conclusions about what all of this is going to mean, but I think we've at least come to an agreement that it has the potential of being very far reaching. You know, we're coming from the mind of someone who took the quiet beating of drums and use that as something that you can find other Whovians in a room with just two fingers and a desk. Very, very quickly. So for someone who understands the sort of infective nature of earworms, effectively, you know, putting something in there subtly and then having it gain significance over time gives him carte blanche on being able to do whatever he wants to with this musical thematic element that they're obviously leaning into.
But I mean, we want to be able to hear what you have to say about it. What are your theories? Are we completely off base, or have you already figured it out? Let us know what you think the solution is.
And time is short, because you only have about a month before you're going to be proven right or wrong.
Right?
And thank you so much for joining us, Jess. If people were looking for you and you were to want to be found on any social media outlets, what would they look
for? If witness protection statute has exhausted
itself. I don't know. Some people don't really want to be out there and have people finding them, but some people do.
It's true. If I told you, I would have to kill you.
Good night, everybody.
I'm mainly on Twitter. Yes, it's called Twitter. And Instagram. I'm at Jess Jerkovic. It's a pretty easy name to find. There aren't a lot of us out there. Primarily, you will find my work on YouTube. I'm the creator of the Dudley Simpson is Doctor Who project. I've transcribed, performed, and analyzed over 250 Dudley Simpson clips from his 15 years in the classic series and turned them into over 50 pieces of piano music. So you can certainly find me there. I'm about to start a season 2.5, a little bit more research-based videos. So I've got a Patreon, patreon.com/JessJerkovic, if you are so interested. I'm about to put out a video on what I'm going to be doing for that season 2.5. So yeah, please find me and say hi.
Fantastic.
And thank you so much for having me. It was great to, you know, run into you at the last galley. And I really appreciate you asking me on to GPR.
Our pleasure.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll see you again on the next time round coming up in August, which is still a little ways away, but
that is true.
The next thing.
That is true. Yeah. I will strongly consider.
Well, this has been episode 517 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next time, this is Jay saying, man, we've been recording way too long. Look, here comes the sun.
Oh, well done. And this is Kier saying, everybody stop. TARDIS binary solo 11011011011011011011011.
And this is Julie saying, Mavity holds the universe together and beauty makes it float around, but music makes it sing.
Okay.
We'll see you next time.
Allez-y.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. As a fan-run podcast, your thoughts and opinions are part of the conversation. Leave us a comment or review on your preferred podcast app, find us on social media to message us, or visit GallifreyPublicRadio.com for email and voicemail contacts. We'll see you out there in time and space.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyrighted in 2024. GPR is a fan-owned, fan-produced podcast. We'll see you next time!